KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
Talking openly about one's mental health has become much more common than in the past, as has seeking treatment for mental health issues. A lot of progress has been made, but there is still a long way to go, and allowing mental health issues to go untreated can lead to a lot of other problems.
So if you have untreated anxiety, or if you are really suffering with stress, with your mood, it's going to affect over the long term your cardiovascular health. It may affect your sleep, which could also affect longevity. It may affect your work performance.
That is Dr. Christopher Pagnani, the founder and medical director of Rittenhouse Psychiatric Associates in Philadelphia. And I'm Matt Leon. And in this episode of KYW News Radio In-Depth, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers, get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. We'll talk with Dr. Pagnani about why it's important that mental health has become more front and center in American society and the importance of getting treatment for mental health issues. So to start, when we talk about mental health, I want to paint with a broad brush to open the conversation. How much better do you think we've gotten, and when I say we, I mean American society, about reaching out for help, getting help that we need about mental health? Because it's not that long ago I can think of that it was incredibly taboo to even speak about it. But I really feel like overall we have turned a corner.
I think that's a great point. Overall, mental health treatment and just talking about mental health has become much more normalized, and that's really been wonderful to see. And I think that really is causing people to reach out for treatment, to get help that they need, but there's still a good amount of ways to go.
To that point, what do you see as kind of the biggest obstacles we are dealing with now? Because I think stigma is still there to a point, but I think it's been pushed down the depth chart right now. What would you say are the biggest obstacles?
Like you said, stigma is a very good point. Some individuals, it's just actually admitting that you have a problem with your mental health. And so that in itself, I think, is a very important step for people to take. Often we'll feel distressed. We might feel sad or anxious or be having difficulty due to the loss of a loved one. And taking that actual step to say, you know what, I am actually really struggling and I need help, that can really be a barrier for treatment. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's so important for people to just to talk about mental health and also to check in. If you see someone who seems to be having a difficult time, they're not quite themselves, or they recently had the loss of a loved one or a changing life event, saying, hey, how you doing? You know, do you need any additional support, or how are things going? They can really go a long way to help people to make that step.
Where are we, would you say, as far as kind of cost and access? Because one of the things, as it has become more normalized, and I think we saw a lot of this during the pandemic, a lot more people say, I need help for whatever the problem is. But I don't feel like we have really increased the number of people there to help. How big a problem would you say right now are things like cost and access?
So cost and access are definitely concerns and definitely issues for a lot of people that are out there. With that being said, availability to mental health treatment has changed dramatically and really improved that access for a lot of people. So to give you an example, just maybe 4 or 5 years ago, you know, I set up my practice 12 years ago. And back then, up until about 5 years ago, people would drive 2 or 3 hours to come to see me to be their provider. It was not uncommon for someone to say, hey, I live out in rural Pennsylvania. I live in southern New Jersey, where I believe you're from, and I'm from as well. And they'll say, there's really no providers down here. So I drive 2 hours for this hour-long visit, for this half an hour follow-up visit, because my mental health is really important to me. In the past few years, as most people know, we've really seen an explosion of telehealth services. And so that has increased availability for a lot of people to the provider, for the providers who are providing those telehealth services. Some of those services are very large companies. We're seeing a lot of that and a lot of growth with some of those companies. Some of those companies, they may do a decent job. But I think that for that really individualized care, it still might be a little bit of a wait or difficult to find that right person for those telehealth services.
Yeah. And kind of to that point, one of the things, you know, there's been a lot of talk about apps and stuff like that. What are the questions you should be asking? When I say you, I mean the person who's looking for an outlet, as far as finding the right fit, making sure that you can get the help you need, and it's not just kind of a service looking to take your $19.99 a month.
Yeah, so that actually is a really good point too. We're seeing an explosion of apps and basic, what I think of as kind of high volume services for mental health care. And a lot of those apps and a lot of the methodologies that they're using, they have not been rigorously studied, or they're not approved by large academic centers or American Psychological or Psychiatric Associations. And there's a lot of money involved with those types of apps, and those companies can make quite a dollar. And so I do think if someone is looking for mental health treatment, it's very important to actually do some research on the providers that you may be seeing, where they trained, what kind of a background they have in terms of their education, their certifications. Are they board certified? Do they have any specialty subspecialties that might really be important for your specific struggles? And then also a little bit about their visits. You know, some of the really large volume companies out there that are providing telehealth services, and a lot of those actually now do accept insurance, which is really wonderful for a lot of people. But some of them may spend 5 or 10 or 15 minutes with someone and then just throw 2 or 3 medications at them and then not really be available between visits. And I don't consider that to be good psychiatry. And so I think that I take a lot of pride in the fact that our providers will spend an hour with you for initial visit or an hour and a half for initial visit. A follow-up is a minimum of 20 to 30 minutes in length. We're really going to get to know not just whether you have an illness that we need to treat, but also a little bit about your background, your history, any traumas, any behaviors that could be affecting things, work situation, family, relationships, because those are all part of mental health. And if you're seeing a provider who spends 5 or 10 minutes with you and then just writes for scripts or increases doses, it might not be in your best interest.
When we talk about the negative effects of not getting treatment, what are the main things that you can kind of see ripple out of just trying to deal with something on your own? What are some of the long-term effects?
Well, I mean, I think that everyone's heard not to be overly dramatic, but stress kills, right? So if you have untreated anxiety, or if you are really suffering with stress, with your mood, it's going to affect over the long term your cardiovascular health. It may affect your sleep, which could also affect longevity. It may affect your work performance. It may even really bleed into your relationship. So it's really hard to be present with a partner, with a loved one, with your family, if internally you're struggling with your emotions on a daily basis, or you're having difficulty handling your emotions. And so when you see people get proper treatment and start to do better, you'll see not only them subjectively say, wow, my mood is more stable, or I feel less anxiety, but they'll say, hey, I'm more productive with work. I'm more present with my kids. I'm exercising more. I'm getting better sleep. Just a lot of different things in their life suddenly start to come together. And it's very hard to have good routines and habits and really take care of yourself if you're struggling internally.
Going along with that, talk a little bit about when is it something that maybe you're just having a bad day, you just gotten a couple of bad breaks, or, you know, you're just kind of going through a little bit of a down cycle. And when is it something more? Like, what are some things you should look at when it's more than just kind of having a crappy day? And maybe there is something more at play here that you should look to get some help on.
So this is a really great question. We've all had experiences in our lives that have caused us to feel stress, that have caused us to feel sad. Those are normal human emotions, and they're very important to have, right? If you have a deadline for work and you're feeling some stress, it might put a fire under you to get things going, to get that report in, or to study for that test. You want to feel normal emotions when you're grieving or when you have difficult times as well. But if you're finding that you cannot actually enjoy the things that you usually enjoy, because you're just unable to feel those pleasurable emotions, or because you can't be present in the moment with family or friends, or it's really starting to, your emotions are affecting your work. And then definitely, if you ever have thoughts that it's not good to be alive or suicidal thoughts, those are key indicators that, you know, hey, it makes sense to reach out and to get an evaluation and talk to someone where this is your specialty, and we can figure out how to get me feeling better. And it is important to note that the answer is not always medication. So a provider may come into one of our providers at Rittenhouse Psychiatric, and they might say, I've really been struggling with my mood, with X, Y, or Z, with whatever's happening in my life. And we might do an evaluation and say, you know what, first step, I want you to work on your sleep hygiene. I want you to work on your diet. I want you to stop having 3 monster drinks in the morning. And I want you to also engage with your family a little bit more. And maybe if you're drinking a little too much or doing X, Y, or Z that you shouldn't, let's also work on those behaviors. Let's give it a couple of weeks and then see how you're doing. If your symptoms worsen, you know, call, come back in for a sooner visit, and we'll figure things out. But when you see providers that take long amount of times to get to know their patients, they're going to be able to work on that holistic care and to really treat the individual and not just a potential couple of symptoms or an illness alone.
We need to take a break on KYW News Radio In Depth. We will have more with Dr. Christopher Pagnani in just a moment. But first, there's nothing quite like the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid when it comes to exhilarating efficiency. With hybrid technology and thrilling capability, these vehicles deliver an electrifying performance on every drive. This new year, discover for yourself what truly makes these hybrids special. Redefine your driving experience with Honda, KBB.com's best value brand of 2023. Contact your local Honda dealer today about the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid. And now let's return to our conversation on KYW News Radio In Depth with Dr. Christopher Pagnani. He is owner of Rittenhouse Psychiatric Associates in Philadelphia. I'm curious, as someone in your position who's been doing it a while, over the last 5-10 years, have you seen a shift in what people are looking for help with? Or is it pretty much the same kind of the pie chart is about the same? Maybe it's just more people, but the breakdown's the same. Or have you seen any kind of a shift over the years in the direction of what you're helping people with?
So up until the pandemic, I would say that things were very consistent. So the first 8-9 years of our practice, we were probably about 20% mood disorders, 20% anxiety, some ADHD, some addiction work, and then people maybe navigating difficult life circumstances, grief, things like that. So pretty even split. When the pandemic occurred, I definitely will say that addiction, you know, a lot of people, they stayed home. They didn't want to go outside. They didn't want to be around other people. And I understand that there were a lot of concerns there. But unfortunately, a lot of people ended up coping with this stress and with the isolation of the pandemic, with increased alcohol or other substance use. And so for the first several years, we really saw an explosion of addiction treatment with our practice. And then I would also say that the last couple of years, and this one is definitely really interesting. It's in some ways concerning. In some ways, I think it's really great that people are getting treatment, but we have seen a significant uptick in people calling for ADHD evaluations. In the past, children, mostly just children, were trying to get ADHD evaluations or looking into their symptoms of difficulty with focus. Now, a lot of calls from adults. And I think that there's just so much more material out there, so much more information about adult ADHD and treatment, which for individuals who have ADHD and have symptoms where medication management may be appropriate, it's really a wonderful thing to see. But one of my concerns is that we have seen an explosion in some of these larger companies treating ADHD and utilizing medications that do have abuse potential and the potential for a lot of negative effects as well. And that's where I say, you know, you really want to make sure you're spending time with patients, explaining to them what these different medication options are, why you might choose something over something else, why you might try non-pharmacological treatment for something like ADHD. At least as an initial option.
We talked about finding the right fit for you. If someone hears this or they've been thinking that something's not right, where should they start? What's kind of step one to trying to get the help they need or to find out why they don't feel like they used to or why they don't think they feel good? Where should somebody start?
So I always recommend having an initial psychiatric evaluation with a psychiatrist or a psychiatric nurse practitioner. If someone says, you know, I want to just bring this up with my primary care, my OBGYN, meet with a therapist, that if that's what you want to take as your first step, great. At least start that conversation. But when you see someone who has additional training and nothing about psychiatry, there's a lot of value to that in terms of doing a full evaluation and having someone really dissect, is this an illness that we can treat? Is it something else? What should the step after this initial evaluation be? If someone, I think that if someone sees as the first step a psychotherapist or their primary care, the person that they're seeing is just not going to have as much experience. And to give you an example, a psychiatrist has an additional 3 to 4+ years of nothing but psychiatry than a primary care provider would have, or an OBGYN would have, or another physician would have. And even a psychiatric nurse practitioner has over a year or 18 months of additional training in nothing but psychiatry, more than a primary care physician would have. And so I think that if you see someone who's trained in both therapy and medication management and trained in these psychiatric evaluations, a psychiatrist, a psych nurse practitioner, they're the best person to do that evaluation and then make recommendations from there.
We've talked about this kind of looking at it through the, you know, the eyes or the idea of someone who needs help. What if you are a loved one, you're in a relationship with someone, it's a member of the family that you've noticed a change or you think something is wrong? What's the best way to approach that? Because I know a lot of times there can be a defensiveness that can lead to more problems. Like if you're worried about somebody, how would you say that person should proceed to try to get somebody some help?
This is really a wonderful question. It's actually funny. Being a psychiatrist, this is one of the most difficult things for me to do with family members or friends, because no one wants to take advice, especially medical advice, from a family member, then they definitely don't want to take psychiatric advice. But if you notice that someone is struggling, what I do and what I recommend is just say, it's like, if you see something, say something. We all hear about that with regards to if you see something at an airport or a bus station or any public place. Same thing with mental health. If you notice, hey, my friend seems to be a little bit different. They don't seem like themselves. They've been isolated more. Hey, how have you been? You don't seem like you're spending as much time going out of the house, or, you know, I miss seeing you. Is there anything on your mind? Anything I can do to help? Just saying those kinds of words will potentially open up a really wonderful conversation. And that might actually be what pushes someone to get the help that they need.
And we started this conversation kind of talking in a broad brush about kind of the state of mental health and people getting help. I want to kind of close on the same thing. Like, once again, in broad strokes, we talked about turning the corner with regards to seeking help for mental health. Take us to the finish line. What are some things you would like to see in society to make it easier, to make it much more, even more mainstream, to get people the mental health they need?
So I would like to see our government agencies continue to put resources into mental health and mental health treatment. I would like to see those entities also continue to support advocacy for mental health. Even just this conversation today, you know, more so recently, we've been having more people interested in talking about mental health in public forums. I think that is so incredibly important to continue to promote the normalcy of mental health treatment. I also think that people need, over time, I'd like to see individuals continue to think more and more about mental health difficulties as medical illnesses. So major depressive disorder, generalized anxiety disorder, panic attack disorder, addiction, and substance use disorders. These are treatable medical illnesses. And I know we talk about your medical conditions and we also talk about mental health, but these are all medical conditions. And so just like your heart can get sick, your lungs can get sick, your brain can also get sick. It doesn't make sense that your brain could never get ill. And so our government and state and cities continuing to promote mental health awareness and resources for people who need it is just incredibly, incredibly important.
That's it for this episode of KYW News Radio In-Depth, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. You can listen to the podcast free anytime on the Odyssey app, and you can find it wherever you listen to your favorite shows. I'm Matt Leon, and we'll have another episode out soon.